Hello, and welcome back to the Teen Health Matters podcast. Teen Health Matters is a project of the Howard County Health Department and is designed to connect you, your friends, and your family to information to help you thrive. To find more information and resources related to all aspects of health and well-being, visit teenhealthmatters.org. My name is Leah Volga, and I'm the Suicide Prevention Coordinator at the Howard County Health Department. And today I am joined by my co-host, Colleen Nestor, and two guests, Ashlyn McNeely and Denise Giuliano from NAMI Howard County. Ashlyn volunteers with NAMI as a presenter for In Our Own Voice and Ending the Silence and teaches peer-to-peer classes. And Denise has served as the executive director of NAMI for the last 4 years, nearly.
Hi, everyone. I'm Colleen Nestor, and I supervise programs in the Youth and Family Support Services Unit at the Bureau of Behavioral Health. I'm really excited for our conversation today. And as many of you may know, that September is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. So we thought it would be fitting to have this podcast theme in this edition focus on how we have tough conversations about mental health and break down stigma and really make it more accessible and easy to talk about tough things together. So I guess to get us started, Ashlyn, if you wouldn't mind, we could start with you. Would you mind sharing a little bit about your personal journey with mental health and what led you to the work that you're doing with NAMI now?
Sure. So I will kind of focus on the teen side of it. So I am 29 now, but I've struggled with mental health all my life. I don't ever remember not having mental health issues, but of course, you know, as a kid, you don't really know their mental health issues. You just, at least I didn't. I just felt like I was broken. I felt like everybody else felt like this. And I was just really bad at dealing with it. And so I kind of dealt with it. My self-medication was self-injury. So I started cutting myself when I was 11. And my first suicide attempt was at 15. And we didn't talk about it. I was this like high achieving kid. I was, you know, most likely to succeed. I graduated early, top of my class, president of all the right clubs. I was that kid, but I got medical care and nobody visited me. My parents didn't talk about it. And then I went right back to school. And so it was this hush, hush. Nobody wanted to talk about it. And so I graduated, I got out of school. Actually, the only reason I got help is I was texting a friend of mine and had told him that I had done something. And he was the one who got me help. And I'm very grateful for that. And we're actually still friends. And that was a long time ago. And so I went to college and things got better because my family is really dysfunctional. And so I got to college and things were kind of better. And then when I was 21, I was involved in an explosion that killed 15 people. And so right after that event, about 10 days, I was hospitalized for the first time in a psychiatric hospital. And soon thereafter, given a diagnosis of PTSD. And that at the time I was in the Air Force. And so a few months later, I was discharged and kind of started my career as a civilian nurse, and everything kind of changed. So I had planned, you know, my 10 and 20 year plan, and I couldn't really do the kind of work I thought I was going to. I just, even in the medical field, you would be surprised that mental health is still pretty highly stigmatized, and it shouldn't be, but it is. Even in different specialties, you don't want to talk about psychiatric. And even, you know, when I was going through my nursing rotations as a student, like the way some of the students and even some of the nurses talked about the psychiatric patients, it's kind of hard to, you know, to think about. And so after a while, I thought I wasn't going to be a nurse and I was just kind of heartbroken. And so I didn't really know what to do. And for a while I didn't work. And then I was in the hospital actually. So things kind of stabilized, but I wasn't working. I got married to someone who was still active duty. And so I had moved all over the country and it was hard to work. And so things kind of stabilized, but, and then I got put in the hospital. I had some rage episodes. And during one of these, I got arrested because I had broken a lot of stuff. And coming from that straight A student, getting arrested was just really traumatic. And so I had another suicide attempt. And that was when I got put in the hospital and I got a bipolar diagnosis at that time. And that was really crucial because that kind of started to address everything else and not just the PTSD, the other things I had really needed to address, the childhood stuff, the everything that had gone on, and not just this one explosion. Because yes, the explosion was obviously this huge life-altering thing, but I needed to address all of it. And so that's kind of what the bipolar diagnosis and starting on the right courses of therapy and the right courses of meds really changed. And then after the hospital, I went into a day program, which is an outpatient hospital. You're kind of, you go to intensive therapy during the day. You see a psychiatrist to check on your medications, but you still got to go home at night. And so I saw an OMNI presentation while I was there and talked to the presenter, who is now one of my dear friends. And that's how I got involved and went from one program to another. And I'm still in the first program and have just added programs in. So
thank you so much for sharing and going into detail about what you've experienced. I think it's important for people to know that mental health really is a journey. We all have mental health and we all have ebbs and flows. So it's not like, oh, I'm suddenly struggling, I need to get help, and now I'm better. It's a constant cycle, and we just have to use different coping mechanisms and things that work for us in the moment. And as you all know, it's not one size fits all. So there might be some things that work for some people and not for others. It sounds like you had a lot of really good peer support and friends in your life that have helped you reach out for help. I was wondering just if you could share a little bit about what it was like to reach out for help for the first time, and maybe how you knew when you texted your friend that you had done something, how you knew that it was time to reach out.
I was just scared. I didn't feel in control of myself anymore, and I didn't feel safe anymore. And he had told me for a while that I wasn't acting like myself. And I kind of literally had told him I was at the end of my rope and I just didn't feel safe. And that's what I told him. And that's when he knew to, you know, to get me help.
In your experience, what kind of support has been the most helpful to you?
So that's a really good question. I think that I personally need people who don't deny the reality of what I'm experiencing, because some people just want to be like, oh, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And it's not that I don't need hope, because of course you need that piece. But what we're experiencing as people living with mental health conditions, it's hard sometimes. So, you know, I want someone who will sit with me in that and not just deny that it does suck, but at the same time, you know, be, hey, it is going to get better, but you have to have both. It has to have that balance. You know, I need someone who will sit with me in the reality, but be like, hey, let's get through this and acknowledge the coping, you know, just like you were talking about a moment ago. Hey, what can we do to help navigate this together? But not just the, for me, the cliche platitudes of, hey, just, it's going to get better. It's never really been helpful. It just is denied and makes me not want to open up about what I'm really going through.
That's actually really interesting. I heard a quote recently around a podcast on mental health, and it was like, being human isn't about just feeling happy. It's about like feeling everything. And we all have feelings of sadness and anger and frustration and happiness and joy on a continuum, right? You know, but it, we only feel more comfortable, like you talked about, even in your experience as a nurse and even in the helping profession, some people have a hard time talking about the tough feelings and they only want to like focus on that, the happy stuff or feel comfortable. And I loved how you said it, kind of just sit with me in this space right now, because this is where I am and I can get there, but you know, I'm here now and I need you to see that and acknowledge where I'm at now. And I guess on that note, this, you know, to both of you, like, how can someone listening today start a conversation about those hard feelings? Because we all experience them, but it's not as easy to bring up, you know, and especially if you're concerned about someone in your life or a loved one you might suspect is struggling with suicidal ideation or mental health issues or depression. How do you start that conversation and acknowledge the tough feeling?
Well, I would say, you know, asking questions like, how are you doing? It seems like you haven't been yourself lately. What's going on? Non-threatening questions, but also being patient at the same time, because that person may not be ready to open up to you. I mean, sometimes just sending a quick text, hey, I'm thinking about you. How you doing? And not really, you know, keeping your expectations low as somebody who's checking in with someone, because you may be having a great day, but they may not be having a great day. And maybe they're not ready to talk to you. But, you know, I would think on some level, they appreciate just the check-in, that somebody is thinking about them when they're having a tough day. I think kind of creating, if you are going to start a conversation, make sure you're not distracted. Just, you know, make sure that it's, you're not, you know, doing stuff on your phone or talking with your kid or whatever, you know, just being completely present. And sometimes just, I mean, the listening piece is so important, and kind of taking cues from how they're feeling and what they want to share, and being okay with that. You know, that maybe they're not ready to share their innermost feelings with you because of who you are, or in your relationship, or maybe just maybe not that day or that time. Where's my doorbell? A half an hour, that's all I need. But I would also just say, let them know that their answers won't change the way you feel about them.
Ashlyn, what questions or words should people avoid? Like maybe in your experience, like to Denise's point, you know, in conversations, that person might not be ready in that moment, but was there anything that, like, when someone's reaching out, when someone would reach out to you or talk with you about things, was there something that a question or a word or like an approach that people should avoid, like that was really not helpful to you in the moment when you really needed support?
When I was younger, and even people now, just the accusatory of that you should, that it's on you, just the pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And I'm not saying that we don't have responsibility, and, you know, that we should take, there are actions you can take, you know. For me, it's going to therapy and taking my medications and, you know, following your treatment plan, but it's not my fault. My illness is not my fault. And when I was younger, and even now, a lot of the stigma is that it is your fault, that you shouldn't be anxious because you should, whatever, depend on your faith, depend on, you know, your parents, depend on whatever. And so that approach was really hard. And that's something I still struggle with, is because I feel like I, you know, well, you have such a good life. You have this, you have this, you know, people get told, well, you have such a great family, you shouldn't feel this way. That's not, again, that kind of goes with what I was saying before, but just pointing out, like, this isn't how you should feel. That accusatory of pull yourself up by your bootstraps is something that didn't really help me at all.
The worst thing you can do is dismiss what's real to a person, because even if it's not what you see, it's what they see and how they feel. And so to just recognize that that's their reality. So to just listen and accept it.
So if you have a friend who holds pretty stigmatized views of mental health themselves, but you're concerned about them because you're recognizing some of those same kind of warning signs or risk factors in their behavior, that they might be struggling themselves with mental health, how do you reach out to that person without making them shut down or close off or feel offended? That's kind of a difficult question.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the good news is certainly that the younger generation is much, much more open about talking about mental illness and mental health. And that, I mean, from my view, is so encouraging. You know, I guess it's difficult because people have their views, and, you know, for whatever reason, their stigmatized views are something, I mean, it's learned behavior, right? I mean, you, whether it's in their house or just their friends, or, you know, and it can be really challenging to break some of that down. But I would just say, you know, bring it up, as we were talking about, in a non-judgmental way, and then maybe try to challenge some of those stigmatizing views. You know, and it's hard because I live in this world and I hear about these types of things every day. And, you know, there is still a lot of stigma surrounding mental illness, but I'm so encouraged by just, you know, and I think some of it is the pandemic has brought it out even more, because so many more people are experiencing, even, you know, that have never had mental health symptoms before. I mean, how can you not? It's, you know, the level of stress at some point, you know, humans are not meant to, you know, to bear a year and a half straight of stress, you know. So I don't know if that really answered your question, Leah, but.
Yeah. Kind of jump into, it's kind of piggybacking off of a lot of what you said, Denise, but kind of being non-judgmental about them, their stigma, because a lot of their stigmatizing themselves is learned behavior. And so, I don't know, it's really hard for us to not judge them judging themselves, but to kind of, and for me personally, I kind of want to, it's not a one size fits all approach. So you kind of want to know where they're coming from to kind of approach it like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, meeting them where they are in their own journey with recognizing their mental health struggles.
Right.
Are there any tips or steps that you think people can take to try to destigmatize mental health and having these conversations in their social circles, like with friends or family members?
I think for me, I mean, obviously I'm in a different position because I'm struggling with it. But it started with me talking about my own stuff. I mean, I do advocate, but I don't bear everything to everyone. But it's like, hey, I was in the hospital for this. Or, hey, I talk about therapy, which a lot of in my family, talking about even going to therapy is a big deal. And so just talking about the little things, which isn't that little to some people, and just encouraging. And if people do bring up things, just roll with it. You know, it's like, oh, I was in the psych hospital. It's like, okay, you know, and you just keep going with it. So just bringing up things that are honest about it. I don't know if Denise, if you have a perspective from a family member or an outside provider, how to kind of have good conversations.
Well, I mean, I guess for someone who's not, who maybe has stigmatized views and maybe isn't ready to talk about it, even suggesting they look, you know, they look on, for instance, NAMI's website. I mean, we have NAMI Howard County's website, but the NAMI website just has a ton, and we're connected to it. So really you could find it at either place, but NAMI.org is a great resource for just finding out basic information about different mental illnesses and symptoms. And like I said, NAMI Howard County's website is connected to Nationals, but you know, the health department has on their website has a lot of great information. So sometimes if you're not ready to actually talk about it, just even like Googling it and researching things, I mean, that can help people get a base of knowledge and maybe understand that there are a lot of other people experiencing, you know, similar things. And then there's always the text line as well. I mean, that's, I guess, typically for someone in crisis who wants to talk to a provider, but, you know, or somebody on the other end. And with texting, of course, it's, you know, certainly much more appealing to younger people who maybe aren't ready to, you know, don't want to actually talk to somebody. The text line is a good resource. And that's, I think there's different versions of it, but you can text NAMI, N-A-M-I to 741-741. But I think it's important to find someone that you trust, whether that's a parent, a friend, a school guidance counselor, a teacher, you know, and start there with someone that you know is not going to judge you and you feel very comfortable around to start these conversations. I think that's really the most important thing.
That's actually a kind of a perfect segue, Denise, because when we're going to let you plug some NAMI resources here in a minute. But I, you know, Ashlyn, you reached out to a friend first, right? And Denise, you're saying, you know, we know folks might be recognizing that they need to talk to somebody, but they're not quite ready. They're not at a place where they think, yes, I need a therapist or I need treatment in a formal fashion. Oftentimes it's like a continuum and you need that like soft entry point to start talking about it with someone that you trust. You know, so certainly reaching out to friends like you did, Ashlyn, or, you know, finding that one person that you think you can open up to. What would you say to young people or someone who's struggling if they know that their families hold the stigmatized view and maybe they're not supportive of someone seeking treatment per se? What resources do you suggest folks connect to get started to talk to someone? Like Denise, you just mentioned the crisis text line is an option for somebody. Maybe they can't go to their family, but they could text the crisis text line. Are there other resources mm-hmm. that can help people explore the idea of mental health treatment and getting support?
Well, I think going back to school counselors and school staff is a really important link, because if you trust that person, you know, the school guidance counselor or school psychologist, you know, they can kind of help bridge that gap maybe with a parent who is not understanding that you might need treatment. So you have with that person, you know, you kind of have the credibility with school staff or a school psychologist to maybe help with that relationship with your parents and helping them to understand that, you know, getting some treatment is a good idea or absolutely necessary, depending on, you know, what the level of mental health condition, you know, what level you're on.
Kind of segueing back to NAMI, what kind of support does NAMI provide to young people and their families who are experiencing mental health symptoms for the first time?
Well, we don't have a support group for teens, but we do have a program through that Ashlyn actually facilitates. It's a program called Ending the Silence, and it's for middle and high school kids in class. And it's a program that kind of goes over, you know, what to look for as far as mental health conditions, suicidality, you know, how to help a friend. And it does it in a series of, there's a little bit of lecture, there's a little bit of video, and then there's some discussion. And we've gotten really great feedback on it. Ashlyn, do you want to say a couple words about your experience? Because I know you love doing it. So
Yeah, it's my favorite thing to do with NAMI. And so we do it just in classroom settings. And we normally do it in, a lot of times we do it in high school health classes, which are the ninth graders. And I'm just like Denise was saying, I'm amazed with this generation's openness to talking about mental health conditions. And it's been really rewarding having people coming up and saying, hey, I'm going to go talk to the school guidance counselor. I think I need help. And hey, what do you think about this? And, you know, sometimes there are resources that are over my head that I have to pull someone else in, but that's good, you know, that they're reaching out for help.
So if you think your school would be interested in a presentation like this, you can just let us know through our website, namihowardcounty.org. And I would also say if you're over the age of 18 and you have a mental health condition and you would like to talk about it, you can be trained to be an Ending the Silence presenter. And I'll also mention there is a small stipend that goes along with being a presenter. So if that's appealing to you at all, but it's a wonderful way to connect with youth. And there are some requirements as far as volunteers that the person has to be between the age of 18 and 35. And to be able to be an Ending the Silence presenter, if they're the actual person with the mental health condition, because the other person can be a family member of somebody that experienced a mental health condition in their school years. But most of our presenters are usually young people like Ashlyn. So if you're interested in that at all, you can also let us know through our website, because we are always looking for people who want to be Ending the Silence presenters. NAMI also has support groups, and I mentioned that we don't have any for teens for liability reasons, unfortunately, because our volunteer or our facilitators, our support group facilitators are all volunteers. They're trained by our state office, NAMI Maryland, but we have support groups for parents and caregivers of school age kids, and then also for transition age youth, which is kind of roughly 16 to 26. And then we have a support group for family members of an adult with mental illness, and then Connection, which is our peer support group for adults. And we also just recently started a peer support group for veterans. So we're very excited about that. So those support groups can be really helpful for people who are trying to stay in recovery and just want to talk to other people who are living through some of the similar things they are.
That's really important. I think fostering that, you mentioned earlier, Denise, our lives, the last, you know, year and a half, if humans aren't wired for this prolonged isolation or stress in this space, and connecting with others is, you know, we know that in the mental health field and the helping professions, connectedness is such an important factor that helps people feel supported and hopeful for recovery and just day-to-day, you know, well-being. And so the connection through NAMI and all of those support groups, it sounds like offers a variety of resources for people at different levels and family members to be connected with other family members and to have that identity around just joining together, you know, to be able to share that.
Yeah. And not only are they sharing experiences, but you also can get new resource ideas through parents who have tried something that maybe worked or didn't work for them. And I think that is the other beautiful thing about a support group, is not only realizing that you're not alone, there are other families, other parents who are experiencing the same type of experience, but also then it kind of opens you up to hearing about other resources that maybe you just didn't know, or a specific doctor that maybe someone else tried that really helped their child. I mean, it's a nice way to connect.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us today for this important conversation about mental health and suicide. And thank you to everybody listening at home that joined in. I just want you all to remember that it's okay to ask about suicide and it's okay to reach out for help. Talking saves lives. And if you or a loved one are having thoughts of suicide, please call Grassroots Crisis Intervention Center at 410-531-6677 or dial 211-1 if you're in Central Maryland. And if you would like to learn more about the resources that Denise and Ashlyn talked about today, you can go on to namihowardcounty.org and visit our website as well at teenhealthmatters.org. And I also want to plug that the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is having an Out of the Darkness walk on October 23rd in Columbia to raise awareness about suicide and mental health. So if you'd like to learn more, you can go to afsp.org and search Howard County Walk. Thank you.
Connect with us We are Dragon Digital Radio.